Hello, I am Patrick Baylor.
And I'm Mason Moreau, and we...
Oh, dude. Do you have the time stone?
Got it in my pocket. Soul...
Wait, I think you left the Eye of Agamotto in your bedroom. Will you go grab it real quick?
Sure, man.
We gotta rewind time and do that again. Hello, I am Mason Moreau.
And I'm Patrick Baylor.
And this is the Son of a Ginger podcast, the only podcast where it's two people talking about movies. That's not true either.
The only one in existence. No others exist. We are the first to do it. Just like the first to make 19 films about superheroes in comics. And that's what we're talking about today. The Avengers Infinity War, directed by the Russo brothers, Joe and Anthony Russo, and written by...
A whole team of people.
And written by Christopher Marcus and Stephen McFeely. Sounds like the name of a...
That sounds like a Rick and Morty character. Hi, I'm McFeely.
I'm Stevie McFeely, and I wrote a film. But that he did with Christopher Marcus and probably a lot of producers in that to make this mega, mega blockbuster that is... The Avengers Infinity War Part 1, or just the Avengers Infinity War.
No, it's just Infinity War.
As of now, in the 1st of May, 2018, we don't know what it's called.
Although, they have Lord of the Rings to this, and the next installment in Avengers has already been filmed.
Yeah, they filmed it like immediately
they
after.
They filmed them back to back. They filmed the whole thing as one production.
Big old thing. Yes, but this was a big old thing in that it had a big, big opening weekend box office in the USA where it made over $250 million and counting.
And just for some context, this is the Tuesday after the Friday of its release.
Yes.
So that's what, 4 days of the movie being out, and it's already made $250 million. That's...
Biggest opening weekend since The Force Awakens, and I think third biggest opening weekend in general, in that I think Force Awakens and Avatar are ahead of it, something like that. Okay. Something like that.
Well, you know, I think internationally it definitely has a good chance of breaking lots of records.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a big movie. And yeah, like we said, this is 5-6 days after it being released, when we're podcasting and talking about it. So we're going to try to unbox a lot and talk about this big... Big, big film. A lot of heroes, a lot of cast members. I could read the entire cast for you, but I think you all know who these folks are at this point. Unless you want to know that Carrie Coon was a villain, and I love Carrie Coon. Carrie Coon is the star of this film. Carrie Coon from Fargo and Leftovers. Great gal.
But who does she play?
She plays one of the big scary monsters.
Are you one of Thanos' lackeys?
Yes. Carrie Coon plays Proxima Midnight.
Proxima Midnight.
And that like sounds like a good name for like a car or something, or like a tattoo to get.
Yeah, honestly, it sounds like the enemy of Knight Rider.
Sure, I believe that. I want to get Proxima Midnight tattooed purely because I think Carrie Coon is such a great actress. But that's a whole other story. But
well, it's pretty cool when she dies. That's for sure.
Spoilers. So yeah, we got a lot of spoilers for you as well. But so we're going to try to unbox what happened first, and like I said, big cast. There's an A plot that goes up to like a J plot, something like that.
Yeah, it pretty much covers the majority of the alphabet in terms of plots that are happening.
Maybe an LMNOP plot.
Honestly, this could be something that you could study and observe how many plots there really are for like a solid week.
Yeah, so we're gonna try to do some of that, but. We're going to do a brief overview of what happens and then get to the nitty-gritty of it later. But
all right.
So we pop in and see Thor and Thanos
first,
facing off, right?
First, starting out, let's talk about the events that are important leading up to the beginning of this movie, which is at the end of Thor Ragnarok. Thor has half of the population of Asgard, the population of Asgard that is left on a spaceship, headed to where they're going to continue their lives or whatever. End credit scene, Thanos' ship comes in, fade to black. Is that not what happens?
No, you're right. But then, I realized after the opening scene,
all the Asgardians are dead.
That's so sad.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I didn't even put those together.
That's why Thor is so sad and brooding during this whole movie.
Oh my! So that means like Tessa Thompson, she's gone.
Yeah. No. The Valkyrie, she's still alive. She's the last Valkyrie.
Oh good.
Oh wait. Was she on that ship with them at the end?
I don't remember.
I don't know. We're getting far into the weeds here.
Anyway.
If you're listening to this and you feel the need to correct us, email us at masspatpodcast@gmail.com.
Is that our email?
That's our email. I made it before we came up with the name.
I'm learning a lot.
Yeah, so we got the Thor part. Thanos' ship comes in. That's pretty much where the movie begins. And then what else do we need to know? At the end of Black Panther,
Wakanda is available to the public, or people know about Wakanda now.
People know about Wakanda now.
Black Panther's a cool dude. And then I think other than that, we kind of know the Avengers stuff after Civil War. They don't really like each other. There's a rift with the government and how they feel about them, but some of them are still doing their thing.
The Sokovia Accords.
Is that what it's called? Yeah.
Yeah, that was the thing that made everyone register.
So thank you for that. But yeah, so there's a lot from past movies, and we could explain those to you, but this isn't the 18 movies before podcast. It's the Infinity War podcast. But yeah, so with some of that leading up, we end up in a spaceship. Thanos. I do this every show. I just don't know how to pronounce a major person's name.
Say it with me. Thanos.
Thanos.
1, 2, 3.
Thanos.
You got it. Okay, so the movie opens. They're on Thor's ship. Thanos has kicked everyone's butt. Heimdall's still alive. Loki's still alive. Thor's still alive. The Hulk's still alive. There's some banter. The Hulk comes in, tries to beat up Thanos. Thanos kicks his butt like he's an MMA fighter. And then Heimdall uses his last bit of life left to send Hulk back to Earth. So that's how Hulk gets back to Earth. Makes complete sense.
Yes.
Which was very pleasing to already off the bat see something that makes complete sense. Thanos kills Loki. How the hell does Thor get out of there? I don't remember. Thanos explodes the ship with the power gem, with the purple gem.
Yeah.
And then Thor finds a way to get out of there. I don't remember how, but he gets out of there, runs into the Guardians of the Galaxy. He lands on their windshield. Very funny. It's really cool to see the Guardians of the Galaxy and Thor interacting for the first time. Then that pretty much sets the plot in motion, right? That Thanos is all about killing half of every population in the universe so that people don't suffer from overpopulation.
Is that why?
Yeah, that's why. So that people don't start polluting or starving or overpopulating, basically just hemorrhaging the resources of their ecosystems. So it's like a reset button without killing everyone.
I didn't realize that's what he was trying to do.
Yeah, so that's why we learned that Thanos sort of believes that he's a benevolent sort of person, because he believes that he's saving all of these societies by committing mass genocide, that kind of thing. So that those are his motivations. In order to do this, he has to gather what are called the Infinity Gems, which if you haven't seen a Marvel movie before...
Watch all of them right now.
Yeah. I mean, they've teased them 8 or 9 times throughout the rest of the movies.
The MacGuffin of the series, if you will.
Yeah. He has this glove that fits all of them. They each control a piece of what we know is the reality, although one's called the Reality Gem. He needs his glove to basically just control everything and snap his finger and make everything go away in one little foul swoop. But no, there are two on Earth. And guess what? Earth's mightiest heroes are there to stop him.
Two Avengers, yeah. And then our homeboy Thanos comes on down. He finds out Doctor Strange has the Time Stone. Vision has the Mind Stone. Then that kind of just sets in motion for all of our heroes to kind of get together and figure out, well, what the heck do we do? And that fragments some of our people.
Yeah, you know, we could do the whole podcast talking about why everyone's where they are. That's not why we're here. We're here to talk about what we thought of the movie.
But, you know, honestly, that's kind of what happens. They figure out stuff happens. Our Avengers get together. They figure out how can we best stop this? Okay, some odd pairings happen. Then a lot of fighting for the better half of the movie, give or take, right? Did I just summarize about 2 hours of movie time in 10 seconds.
Yes, but I don't think you ruined it. You know, I think
nothing really has been spoiled yet.
Nothing really.
Nothing really. Except you saying Loki died.
So Thanos.
That happened in the first scene. Is that really a spoiler if it happens in the first scene?
I mean, honestly, if someone hears the fact that Loki died, they'll probably still just be like, oh, he's going to come back. Because he's come back like 4 times.
That's true. Well, that's the thing. If like someone dies, it's like, okay, well, did they die because they still have like 2 more pictures left on their 6-picture deal? I don't know.
So that's the thing. That's where you start to see the cracks in the foundation. It's like when they kill off a character in these movies, you know, from the like rigorous reporting is that like these people are signed on for like 3 more movies. So you know that they're not going to die. You just wonder how they're going to come back to life.
And the mystery of that is fun. But yeah, it's just like, oh man, it seems like half of the cast just all died at the end there. Oh, well, what happens? Oh, I guess they need some new Avengers. Now they're all going to come back, of course, because they were reported to be filming on there.
Exactly. And it's like...
But hey, we're smarter than the average bear, so...
Exactly.
I mean, and there's some bears in this world that are like, man, I don't know what done happened to Thor! Ah!
If you're in... You know, if you're a child...
That as well.
An adolescent, and you're watching this... Then, like, you don't know anything about contracts, and you don't know anything about how Robert Downey Jr. is signed on for 6 more films.
Yeah, I don't think little Billy is reading the deal section in Variety magazine. Yeah, I don't think so.
Right. Although, when I was in 4th grade, I did have a subscription to Variety.
Look at you.
My grandma got it for me.
You a little power player back then? Signing some folks to your agency?
I was making deals and eating meals.
Speaking of meals, there was a lot to eat in this film, and then the biggest...
There's a lot to digest.
A lot to digest. There was a lot to digest in this film, and one of the harder things to swallow, so we're just going to fast forward a little bit to the end, is that about half of our cast disappears. About half of the Avengers...
They dissolve.
...goes away and dissolves. After, you know, after lots of fighting, our boy Thanos does get all of the Infinity Stones.
So yeah, if I could quickly summarize, Thor spends the whole movie trying to create a new weapon that can kill Thanos with the aid of giant Peter Dinklage, which I found great. I love Peter Dinklage in this
ironic movie.
Yeah, it has that irony, but also like you could tell
it's an oxymoron.
That Peter Dinklage auditioned for this part probably partially because he's like, I'm going to play a giant and I'm a dwarf.
His race, or like his alien race in that, is described as the dwarves.
Yeah, they're the dwarves. And if, side note, if anyone's played God of War, they explain that in Norse mythology that even though your race is a giant, you can still be the size of a human, and giants can be giant, and dwarves can be human size, and they can be dwarvish.
I believe that.
Like it's all muddy, but I'm getting carried away.
So that was like one of the B or C plots that, you know, while all of our heroes were off, kind of like fighting Thor in space, or not Thor, fighting Thanos in space and Thanos's minions on Earth, that Thor was not doing most of the fighting in this film, and that he was trying to get that last final weapon to actually kill Thanos and his gauntlet.
Yeah, so that's Thor's plot explained. He spends the whole movie with Rocket Raccoon and Groot, yeah, and teenage Groot, trying to get this weapon made, which he does, and he plunges it into Thanos's chest at the end, and Thanos says, "You should have gone for the head," and he snaps his fingers, and half of the people in the MCU dissolve. So Patrick, what did you think of the choice to make half of the people dissolve?
Well, so, you know, that's a latter choice. I think it's a fun choice for whatever the next film is. You know, I don't think the people that vaporized are dead at all. You know, like, they are in some other timescape or some other dimension or somewhere. They could be where Red Skull is. To backtrack, Red Skull shows up again.
Right. For almost no reason, but I'm glad he was there.
I think for a reason in that it explains where he went at the end of the first Avenger. Also in this version, it is played by Ross Marquand from Walking Dead fame. It was not Hugo Weaving. Hugo Weaving like stated, "This was a fun film and I like doing it, but I don't want to do one of these again. And I'm like contractually obligated to do it. And if they will force me to, I will." But they they're not some people that will force me people into doing something they don't want to do. And then they didn't. So they got Ross Marquand, who's a great impressionist, and he was Red Skull, and he filmed for a day, according to a nice article I read in Entertainment Weekly earlier.
I didn't even think it wasn't Hugo Weaving. So, like,
I mean, Ross Marquand is a great impressionist.
Cool.
I wish I watched Walking Dead more.
Yeah, I've quit. I've quit on that show.
Yeah, I'll catch up to it just so I can talk about it with my dad. But yeah, so those folks, they are in another dimension, and the people that did stay, which are mostly the OG Avengers. You know, I think it's like Iron Man, Captain America, Black Widow, they're all still intact. And then like Groot and Raccoon, I think are all still like thriving and alive. So they're going to essentially save the new heroes that we've come to know and love in the last 3 years or so of these films and save the day, and something will happen. I don't know.
The next Avengers will be a bottle episode. Narrow it back into the originals and have it be about them, and it's going to be their swan song, and they're going to die. Most of them are going to die, and they're going to bring in the new people they've introduced.
No, see, they're just going to be in a nondescript large studio in Pinewood Studios, but like no green screens or anything. It's just like the warehouse things that they are. Yeah, I've been in there before, you know. I was an extra for one episode of a show on the Oprah Network, so I've seen some stuff. Which was at Pinewood Studios. And like half of the people on that were like, oh yeah, I was a PA on this, I was a PA on that. I was like, oh cool.
Interesting.
I want to be a PA on that. And then I gave someone my business card.
Nice.
Networking, everyone. Yeah, so I think the next, it'll set up to be some kind of, our heroes are done, their contracts are up, but look at all these new heroes that you've known to love. I do want to talk about more of what happened in this film before we get to that stuff later. Because there were a lot of plots, like we said, and a lot of pairings. What pairing did you like and you think like moved the plot the best?
I think the Thor and Rocket Raccoon was one of the strongest.
Their mission.
Little duos. Because yeah. It was cool to see those two pair. You know, they're not someone two people you would expect to be paired up. And their personalities worked well. The writing of the two characters interacting was done pretty well.
I like what they did with how, you know, Thor has kind of been reintroduced since Ragnarok, and that he's a funnier character, and that they used him to just kind of make fun of Raccoon and just be like, oh, come on, Rabbit.
Yeah,
let's
go, Rabbit.
Come, Rabbit, let's do this and that and this. Mm-hmm. I think that was fun in that pairing.
Yeah, you know? when he was calling him Rabbit, that was great. Also, one of my other favorite pairings in the movie was Tony Stark and Doctor Strange. I really liked their banter because they're both sort of two sides of the same coin. In terms of, they're both sort of egotistic.
Both have great beards.
People who understand that they also probably, that they have a greater purpose in some capacity, but for different reasons.
And then they both of their egos still kind of take the best
right,
of them.
Exactly.
Well, and then I think with Doctor Strange, he more so has kind of learned how to put his ego aside while Iron Man, far from that.
Iron Man has, Tony Stark has thrived due to his ego.
Yeah. And that was kind of the air of Doctor Strange's ways, is that his ego kind of got him where he was, of that made him lose his medical license and then make him gain all these powers.
I'll say overall, I liked this movie a lot. It's definitely my favorite Avengers.
Oh, hands down mine. Like, this blows Age of Ultron out of the water.
It's the Empire Strikes Back of the Avengers series. Avengers, I can't say franchise because the whole MCU is a franchise, but like the Avengers series of films, it's the Empire Strikes Back. And it, in my opinion, is what should have been the sequel to the first Avengers. The only reason Age of Ultron has any reason to exist is because it sets up the events for Civil War, which is a far superior movie.
Yes.
And it introduces a Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver, who Quicksilver dies. Scarlet Witch becomes a very main character.
Does Vision show up as well in that film?
Oh, and it creates Vision. They create Vision.
And that's why Ultron was important, because Vision was the most important thing. Because as they said in this film and in the other films, you know, Ultron is a mix of the consciousness of Tony Stark and then, of course,
Jarvis.
And then Ultron as well, and then this, you know, the Mind Stone that's implanted right in his forehead,
right,
to make this nice, benevolent superhero. that is, you know, a major MacGuffin for this film, in that there's a superhero with one of these stones in him. Let's get him.
Right.
And then that's what the entire back half fight in Wakanda is. Oh, Vision's in Wakanda? Let's get him. And then Thanos sends his minions down to get him. And that put a lot of pairings as well, because the gang has to go to Wakanda. So, like, you know, most of the gang does end up in Wakanda. And it was fun to see the Wakanda scenes. I couldn't tell you. So I love the Wakanda fights. Those were epic. I wish I had popcorn so then I could just eat it and be like, whoa, wow. What I've learned with all these movies, I need to bring popcorn and bring my own instead of buying it for $8. Because I'll always say, $8? That's the cost of my film ticket. Rah!
Rah!
Rah! So those fight scenes in Wakanda I thought were great, but the pairings were, those were, I guess, kind of forced in that they needed to be, in like, oh, we all got to be here together to stop this fight. But there were a lot of pairings that I just didn't care for, and maybe just because it's the older, more straight-laced characters. Honestly, didn't care much for anything. And first off, didn't feel like he did much. But Captain America
and Black Widow.
They didn't do anything.
Took a straight up backseat in this movie.
They took a total backseat. They didn't do a damn thing.
The most important moment for Captain America in this movie is when he grabs Thanos' hand and is actually doing something to move it, and Thanos looks a little bit surprised. And then we're done.
Yeah, but otherwise it's like, hey, he's in this like little strike force group. That's like him, Black Widow, Falcon, and Scarlet Witch, maybe.
Yeah, they're like a task force. They're like Mission Impossible, James Bond shit.
Exactly.
Like they're like some secret organization of espionage soldiers.
Yeah, and that's what they kind of exist for. And I think a War Machine as well. I think he was in that group.
Yeah.
And that's what that kind of existed for.
Oh, wait, no, he wasn't. He was at the Avengers facility.
Oh, you're right. And I think that's what that existed for. However, I think they will have way bigger roles in the second film. Because, like I said, they were one of the few that didn't vaporize.
Right.
That
All of the older people who have had established arcs in older movies are the ones who stayed.
Yes.
Which really does point to the fact that their stories are probably about to come to an end.
Yeah. And also, I think I mentioned them before, God bless Entertainment Weekly this week. They've just sent, like, put out so many nice articles to kind of keep track of everything that has happened. I'm looking off a nice article that they post of who's alive, dead, vaporized, and we don't know yet. And yeah, so the people that are confirmed alive: Iron Man, Captain America, Thor, Black Widow, Hulk, War Machine. Those are the OG folks. And then Hawkeye, right, is the last one. And
yeah,
then,
they did. Hawkeye wasn't even in this, so I feel like he's going to come back and be pretty badass later, but
yeah.
Not in this movie.
Yeah, so those are those people. So those are like the core people that showed up in the very first film. And then the other people are some fan favorites, but still some older. Well, some fan favorites are Rocket Raccoon, Nebula, Okoye, a.k.a. Deni Guerra, and then M'Baku, a.k.a. Winston Duke. Okoye and M'Baku are from the latest.
They're from Black Panther.
Film, yeah, Black Panther. Who people really loved. And it's kind of cool to see them in an Avengery role as they help out the core Avengers that didn't get vaporized. Because, yeah, they're gonna band together and do something. And that being said, we got to see a lot of screen time for those more recent people that we liked. The Black Panther didn't show up until like an hour into the movie, it seemed like.
Yeah, he didn't show up until he was needed. This movie's very long. It's 2 hours and 40 minutes.
Yeah,
long.
it's a lot to pack.
Yeah, it makes use of that time like very economically.
Also, it seems like Bucky had nothing to do in this film. I feel like they ran out of things for him to do.
He was the glue that tied Captain America and the rest of them to Wakanda.
Yeah,
he was the reason they knew that they could go there.
And hide him out.
And hide him out.
And then I was like, hey, we know about Wakanda. And then, oh man, we got to fight the bad guys. I know, just the place. Let's go to Wakanda, where my buddy Black Panther is. Hooray.
So here's something that I was thinking about. I'm going to go through a couple of things I was thinking about while watching this movie.
Let's hear them.
One, every time I see one of these movies with the giant Marvel ensemble cast, I think about how when these movies come out, they make movie history every time. Because nobody's done something like this. Nobody has created a 20-film story arc that incorporates a whole bunch of different characters that will eventually all have a movie where they all have a part in it.
Sort of. Marvel, I think, is the first to perfect two things. They're the first to perfect... Well, I think they're the first to, you know, really make a true cinematic universe, but I think they're the first to perfect making a worthwhile big franchise. Because, you know, the first to make a big one where all the movies were connected, I think, is Harry Potter, honestly. At least a large scope, you know, film franchise. You know, that's 8 films where they're all connected.
Mm-hmm. But see,
however, there's not like a Harry Potter solo movie and then what happened to Hermione when she was a 4-year-old? There's none of those types of movies.
There's Fantastic Beasts, which is now there's the Harry Potter cinematic universe. But that's a little bit, that's cheating. But
that's post Marvel. That's post Marvel. But then
post Marvel, they hopped on the Marvel train.
But then, you know, then another film franchise that, you know, made a bunch of films that weren't connected but made a bunch of films. James Bond, you know, but none of those, all those films aren't necessarily connected, you know, like 3 are connected, then another 4 are connected, and so on and so forth.
You're very right.
But then, you know, X-Men as well, you can argue, kind of started a big universe as well, first off. Yeah. And I mean, you know, they kicked off the modern superhero flick.
Well, yeah, the first X-Men was the first superhero movie to have a huge hit at the box office and send every comic book property into the studios.
But then I'd say they were they were first to it of making prequel movies and other standalone movies. You know, they were making Wolverine movies and then, you know, X-Men. This is what happened years ago before these happened. So yeah, X-Men were kind of the first to do it. However, Marvel perfected it. Yeah. Fox and X-Men muddled it because they got a little too caught up in they can time travel and then things have changed in different realities to where...
Yeah, and they've rebooted the franchise a few times and then they skip. Logan was great. Anyway, yeah, so every time I watch these movies, I get amazed just because of the history that's being made when the movies get put out. But then also, here's another thing is I haven't read the original Infinity Gauntlet sort of run in the comics. I read a detailed synopsis of what happened because, you know, like tracking down all of the comics in that run is just like it's too much of a pain for
taxi.
Me to, you know, like it, and then like I could either do that or go on Comixology, which is like ebook comics, and then it's $40 for that when I could just read the synopsis. Anyway, Thanos's motivation in that is he's in love with the female manifestation of death, the female Grim Reaper. And he's got the Infinity Gauntlet, and he's killing and providing her with souls because he's trying to win her affection. He's trying to court death. In the end credit scene of the first Avengers, Thanos' little lackey says, "To challenge humanity is to court death." And that's when he turns around and does that little iconic smile that made everyone go, "Whoa!
Who's this purple guy?"
Yeah, exactly. So they sort of set it up, and you know, maybe they'll explain that in the next movie, that his real motivations are a little bit more sinister and selfish, that he's trying to win over death. But I like the idea of having this big purple omnipotent being motivated by love, because that sort of humanizes him.
It makes him a way better villain, especially in that has been Marvel's biggest problem, is that their villains seem like they have no motivation. Then they'll just say, "I want to rule the world. Now I'm going to do it," and then be thwarted in 2 hours.
Right.
See you at the end.
And so when I was just a hair disappointed when they didn't touch upon any of that in this movie.
Like we said, there's another movie to watch.
I can't wholeheartedly criticize the movie for that, because Thanos' story arc still has at least one more movie to go.
Totally fair. Do you think he is one of the way better villains of these Marvel films?
I think he's the best. He's the best villain.
Yeah.
Because they built him up to be that. And they knew that there's been so much build up towards this movie that they had to have someone and something that was going to shake up the whole... This is the first time any of the Avengers have seen something where they didn't know how to beat it.
That's why I like this movie, for 2 reasons. First off, payoff. This movie had so much payoff.
Right, yeah.
That.
It has stuff in it that you didn't even know you wanted.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I'm trying to think of what I knew I wanted that didn't want. I don't know.
When Hulk and Thanos were in the fist fight. I didn't know I wanted that, but I was like, this is awesome.
Oh, and that was the first scene, wasn't it? That was cool. And because, yeah, there was so much payoff that made him a better villain, and that we've kind of, you know, been seeing his grimacing purple face in the post-credit scenes of a lot of these movies, not knowing necessarily his spiel other than, I want to destroy the world, or I want to destroy half of the world. And then through one movie where he's finally the focal point, I kind of get where he's coming from and understand, oh, well, I understand his villainy of why he's being villainous. And we see him go through a lot of stuff, and that to get the Soul Stone, he's to sacrifice someone that he loves, and that is his daughter, Gamora. Which is tough for him because it seems like he couldn't love anyone, and then there is the one thing that he loved.
Right.
Throws her down a well.
Yeah, and you know, like, the best villains are the ones who think they're the good guy.
Yeah, and he, right, like, he explains so much of why he thinks he's right, and we all know it's wrong, but he's the only one that, like, thinks he's truly right, him and his lackeys.
You can see why he believes that he's right. That's the genesis of a good villain, is something where that the audience can not agree with, but can still understand. Having said that, there are exceptions, like the Joker from The Dark Knight, where you don't agree with anything that he does, but you're like, he's just compelling and interesting to watch.
Or Steppenwolf from Justice League.
Not at all.
I just want to briefly say, good for you, Marvel. Like, you've beaten Justice League and DC. Like, I couldn't tell you much I would like DC to do this, but I think after this movie, like, I think DC needs to just hang it up and do what I think they want to do, is just make some solo films and not attempt a cinematic universe, because it's hard to do with such a direct competitor.
Right.
Try it again in 15 years. New voices, new actors. I don't know.
So, Patrick, are there any characters that you think you could have done without in the movie, or any characters where you just really didn't see why they were involved at all?
See why they were involved at all. Like I said, like, Bucky, the Winter Soldier, you know, makes sense that he's like the paste of the of some other films, and that's why he's there. But he didn't serve any purpose. The biggest one that I think didn't do a whole lot, and, you know, and I understand the decisions that he made, but it was, I guess, frustrating there in the theater, was Star-Lord. Of the biggest thing that the movie could have technically been over and done with, if he just kept his emotions in check for 2 minutes before really beating up Thanos, after Thanos, like, revealed that he killed Gamora and stuff. And, you know, I guess that's his character. You know, he's very bold and fueled by passion. That's how Star-Lord moves. But that was kind of a frustrating scene to watch, in that, like, oh, everything could have been fixed and they would have been fine if literally they just kept this dude in check. And you couldn't tell me that all these people with these superpowers that were around him couldn't have kept him in check as well. Like, you're telling me, like, Spider-Man couldn't, like, do a quick web thing to just keep Star-Lord somewhere else for a second so they can get the damn gauntlet off, you know? That was a hair frustrating. Understood why it existed, but now, like, as I'm saying, like, okay, there's so many people with superpowers that could have stopped Star-Lord. You're telling me that Doctor Strange couldn't quickly pause whatever Star-Lord is doing, and then they keep going at their stuff? No, it didn't happen. That was frustrating to me. How did you feel about that part?
I liked it. I honestly thought that part was good, and it was very well acted by Chris
and I
Pratt.
See where it makes sense in the film overall. Like, that's what moved it forward, and I understand that writing decision.
Yeah, I think just in my mind, what made that justified for me is knowing that he cared so deeply for his mom, and she died. He ended up just, like, in the events of the most recent Guardians movie, he had to kill his dad. And you're reminded of that in this movie when he's arguing with Thor about who's had the worst stuff happen to them.
Yeah.
And then now this girl that he loves, the only girl in the galaxy he's found that he loves, has been killed as well. I sort of see why he starts acting out of emotion over universe of feelings has been destroyed already.
So, yeah, I feel that. But, yeah, that's kind of what irked me. That, like, only irkling. But otherwise, you know, I was satisfied with the film. But, like, it was overall quite good. Quite good. My favorite Avengers movie of, like, you know, of the three Avengers movie, and I'm of the four, because I'm going to count Civil War as an Avengers movie. Sure, Captain America, that's an Avengers movie. And possibly my favorite MCU movie.
Yeah, it's definitely one of my favorite. I think Winter Soldier is still at the top.
I still want to say Winter Soldier, but and maybe I need to watch it again. But like I said, payoff. This, I feel like I was rewarded for going through all of the other movies. I feel like I was rewarded as a fan. I watched all the other movies and was finally waiting on something big to happen, big and pivotal, to move everything forward. And that's what I got with this film.
Mm-hmm. So, speaking of moving forward, give me three big predictions that you have for the future of the Avengers franchise, the Avengers series.
So my big predictions are first based off of, I guess, questions. We have two more MCU movies before Infinity War Part 2, whatever it's going to be called, when it comes out in May 2019. And those are Ant-Man and the Wasp, coming out in July of 2018. And then Captain Marvel, which is coming out in March of 2019. Ant-Man, I have no idea.
They're both going to be prequels.
Ant-Man will be a prequel.
Ant-Man and the Wasp and Captain Marvel will both be...
How is Ant-Man and the Wasp going to be a prequel? I don't think that's right.
No, it's confirmed that they're both going to be prequels.
Okay, so that explains a lot. Because, like, I have... Because, you know, Ant-Man wasn't in this film.
No, he wasn't.
No idea, like, if they're going to, like,
house arrest.
Find something in, like, the quantum realm or whatever that will solve everything. And I don't think... Literally, he's so minuscule, I don't see how he's going to help. Minuscule in two fact. Like, you know, he's Ant-Man, he's a little guy. But he's definitely, like, a B-list MCU Marvel character anyway, so I don't see how, like, his movie will, like, explain, oh, we have this technology that can save the world now. Hooray. So I don't have much faith in him, but with Captain Marvel, that's where I'm excited and jazzed for, because, you know, that the end credits scene where, as Nick Fury dissipates, he hits a button, and then it puts up the Captain Marvel logo, and then everyone is like, oh, man, can't wait for March now to see that movie.
Exactly.
Can't wait another 10 months. So with those in play, Captain Marvel, you know, we'll figure out what happens with her and understand her story with her film. And then I'm sure there'll be a post-credit scene where then she now gets a page and then zips on over to the movie, zips on over to Avengers Part 2. We'll understand her powers and understand that she'll help out. But like I said, I think they're in some kind of realm that maybe Ant-Man will be able to get to. I don't know. With some technology, like, because I'm sure he's in the second film and he'll be able to help out somehow.
Yeah, I assume they're going to incorporate someone. Or maybe Wasp will be in that one and Ant-Man will have been dissolved at the end of Ant-Man and the Wasp.
They're going to make one. I mean, they're going to have to make that movie matter because there's a reason why there's only two of those movies.
At least one of them needs to back up to the end of Infinity War.
Yeah. But, I mean, other big prediction is just, you know, based off of just cosmetic. Yeah, like I said, like reading Variety magazine and that, like, most of our stars don't have many more movies left. While, like, our newer stars do, like, there is a Black Panther 2. There is a Spider-Man 2. There isn't an Iron Man 4. There isn't a Thor 4, I don't think. So, unless those get announced that there are going to be those, like, I think we're going to lose Iron Man. And I'm not sure how. I think Thor is going to dip out somehow. Thor might stay. But I'm not confident that Hulk will stay or something.
If they get rid of Thor, they're going to have to introduce another character that is just like Thor.
Valkyrie? Maybe question mark?
Beta Ray Bill.
Beta Ray what?
He's basically like Thor with a horse head.
Just saying Beta Ray Bill, I think, will just really get folks excited to go into the theaters.
I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy was...
Beta Ray
Weird
Bill
too.
Does not sound interesting. Beta Ray Bill sounds like it's destined to, like,
people
fail.
Have been predicting Beta Ray Bill to show up in this universe for a while.
Beta Ray Bill just sounds dumb.
It does, but so does Captain Marvel.
I don't know. Well, Captain Marvel exists of, like, hey, this is our major person. She's going to save the world. And she has our name on the film? That's just easy marketing. Hey, remember who made the film? Marvel Studios. Yeah, her sidekick is Lil Studio.
Hey, did you go see Captain Marvel yet? Nah, dude, I'm not into the DC universe.
What about you, man? You got some expectations, some predictions?
Yeah, I've got a couple. Aside from Beta Ray Bill, I think that Cap is going to die and Bucky is going to take his place as Captain America proper.
Like I said, because Chris Evans has, like, what? No movies left.
Okay.
Bucky has like four movies left. I'm so sorry.
Ignore contract disputes.
Sorry, man.
And just talk about the story.
And also him saying in interviews, yeah, this is going to be my last one.
I think that there is a good reason why there's a father-son dynamic between Tony Stark and Peter Parker, which is that for Robert Downey Jr.'s departure, they're going to kill off Iron Man, and Tom Holland is going to take up the mantle of Iron Man. And ooh, they will the next few Spider-Man movies will have Miles Morales as Spider-Man, and we'll have Tom Holland as a younger Iron Man learning to fill the shoes of Tony.
See, I would love that, but do you think they're going to make another new Spider-Man? That just seems exhausting at that point. That would be our fourth Spider-Man in a 20-year span?
But see, here's the thing. They're coming out with the Miles Morales animated movie pretty soon, so they're already getting audiences acclimated to the fact that he exists.
Other than, hey, let's make Donald Glover Spider-Man.
Well, that's just not going to be Donald Glover.
Well,
that's
of course not.
Donald Glover's nephew in the Marvel Cinematic
Universe.
Well,
yeah, I know. But I'm just saying that's how I know about who Miles Morales is from that poll when they were trying to figure out who the amazing Spider-Man was that later went to Andrew Garfield way back when in old 2012. Oh, yeah. So long ago.
And, you know, like they could still give Tom Holland another movie as Spider-Man.
Possibly.
And maybe the next Spider-Man movie will sort of be an end of Dark Knight Rises sort of situation where Tom Holland is discovering this track of breadcrumbs that dead Tony Stark has laid out for him to understand or to figure out what Tony Stark had sort of led him into or was training him for.
I could believe that.
To be a successor to something. Maybe not the Iron Man mantle, but you know, Tony Stark's giving him these little gifts and these little like pieces of guidance along the way. But
yeah,
he gave him
this little the Spider-Man Iron Man suit that
right
let
the
him
Iron
fly
Spider
space.
Armor.
Yeah.
He gave him the legit other Spider-Man suit that has AI in it and stuff.
That is the best argument I think for that. Because I wanted to say, oh, well, Shuri will maybe be the new Iron Man, and that I think the new Iron Man in those comics is now a woman. Shuri has had some great fan response, so I think purely off of that. But fans aren't deciding what happens in this film. The executives are deciding what happens in these films. So it would, as cool as it would be to see Shuri become new Iron Man, the Iron Wakanda. Though she'll be Vibranium Girl, not Iron Man.
And you know, I think that if they were going to make an Iron Woman, they should introduce a brand new character
instead of Shuri.
That's just as iconic as Tony Stark is, but in ways that make sense for a female character.
Totally.
I think that if they're going to find someone to fill Tony Stark's shoes after his departure, whether or not he just disappears or if he dies, the current Spider-Man is a great replacement.
What will be interesting with these movies, regardless, is maybe, and I think after these movies, some, I think, more original ideas that, again, could have been in comics, some like of the newer comics that I haven't read, but some stuff where they're kind of introducing it and veering off towards comics to like truly original content creation of like, hey, we think this is going to be a good idea. I think this will be fun. Instead of, oh, well, let's see, let's look back at all the logs of past comics. Oh, they did this in this comic in 1997, so now we can do it. Excellent. Oh, they did this in 2005, now we can do it. I think I would like to see it, hey, we made up this idea in 2019, and we're going to film this, and this will be a movie that comes out in 2022 type of thing.
Right, yeah. It takes a turn for more of the original versus the derivative.
And my big question is, like, in the world of the cinematic universes and continuity in general, will they, you know, reboot all of this come another couple of years and do it all over again? Or will they continue giving us payoff and, you know, make all of these lead to something and keep, you know, this saga, this canon mean something and keep it going in a certain direction instead of doing what we've seen in the other franchises of, oh, maybe we're not selling too well. Let's make a new Spider-Man. We got lost in the criticisms of these X-Men movies. Let's make an X-Men movie that takes us back and sets it all apart again. I don't know if they'll do those because, you know, those that I mentioned didn't really necessarily work. And that's why Disney now will probably own Fox and the X-Men franchise and why they have Spider-Man. Because those didn't work. And now that X-Men is in their wheelhouse that they can use, will those folks be introduced with some of our newer characters in later films? I don't know.
The end of the Infinity War arc will be a drastic tonal shift for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. The end of the Infinity War will be a turning point for how we see the MCU. So it'll be a new, after, from there on will be an MCU without Chris Evans, without Robert Downey Jr., without all of these names that have become household due to the MCU.
Mm-hmm.
And the next big thing that they're going to have to prove is that these stories can still succeed and these stories can still remain fresh and new.
Yeah. And I think that's what the new films that have been announced will exist, is kind of like a glue for the old movies that we've seen these last 10 years, and the new one's impossible reboot that comes out, and that we're going to have one more Guardians movie. We're going to have Spider-Man 2. We're going to have Black Panther 2. The more successful films of the last 5 years anyway.
Right.
I mean, they're all successful, but
mm-hmm.
best received.
Right.
And those will be that glue that I think, yeah, will launch us into phase 4, if that's what they're calling it, or phase 1.2 or 2.0. I don't know.
I've stopped keeping track of the phases. They really stop mattering.
Well, they are still technically in phase 3 if we're... No? I don't know. It's hard to keep track.
Yeah.
There's so many damn movies.
Definitely.
When they get to movie 40, you know?
So,
as we're on movie 19.
Closing thoughts. Let me get your opinion.
Closing thoughts, a great superhero film, defining of the generation of team-up films.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said earlier, it's going to be hard to copy. DC couldn't do it when they did their first Justice League of trying to copy, you know, really the first Avengers. I don't know if any other franchise will try to do this, but I think this is definitely a defining generational film of superhero movies in general.
Sure.
But it's a game changer.
Definitely.
Game changer and a good film.
It's the discords part in the act structure of the Avengers movies. It's the one that leaves you with an eager pit in your stomach to know what is going to happen next.
Yeah.
Like Empire Strikes Back, like many of the good dark sequels to movies in a trilogy or in a series of movies. And that's what I really liked about this one, is the first one where you leave and you're like, oh, I really don't know what's going to happen next. Even though they showed me that end credit scene, it really doesn't explain much.
And of Avengers films, this is, like we said, kind of act 4.
Right.
Yeah. If it's 5 acts, and that, you know, Avengers 1, 2, Civil War.
Yeah. So that's what I really, really enjoyed about this movie, is it remained fresh by becoming the thing that we really needed it to be. It's one of the last stones to leave unturned, I feel, before a drastic shift in the MCU needs to happen.
And that they found all the Infinity Stones.
Right, yeah.
Well, we're not going to do another podcast until the next one comes out, so thanks, guys. Just kidding, y'all. We've been enjoying doing these podcasts, and we're going to try to do more. Mason, how can we find our old podcast, by the way?
If you want to listen to some previous episodes of Son of a Ginger, check us out on Google Play, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify. If you want to visit our website, go to sog.buzzsprout.com. Pretty much it's just our episodes on there as well. Please subscribe. Please keep listening. Please keep helping our shows grow. I really enjoy looking at our analytics and seeing that we get more concurrent listeners.
And we're trying to do more of these. And also, what was our email again?
It is maspatpodcast@gmail.com.
And if you'd like to be a guest, shoot us an email.
Yeah, shoot us an email if you're in the Atlanta area, and then we'll see about throwing something together. If you want to be a guest, that'd be great.
Heck yeah. Well, thank you all. We came together. A lot of Avengers came together. We're two Avengers right here. Signing off. I am Mason Moreau.
And I am Patrick Moreau.
Did we mess it up again?
Looks like we're going to have to rewind the whole thing and do the whole podcast again.
Oh, man. And what? Thank you all. I'm Patrick Baylor.
I'm Mason Moreau.
Have a good day.